Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Welcome to the Top Order Podcast. Short episode, we hope, this week. We've got a few things to cover, but lots and lots of test cricket going on. And we'll be back later in the week to wrap up all the goings on, particularly that England versus India test match that's going on in Chennai right now. But we are going to talk some Super Smash, some Big Bash League, a little bit of women's cricket as well, and South Africa and Australia series cancelled as well. So we'll go into all of that after the swish. We'll see you very, very soon. So we want to start, I think, close to home. Bordy and I had the pleasure of being over at Eden Park number one today to watch the game between the Firebirds and the Aces. Firebirds already qualified for the final, and they will play either Canterbury or CD, depending on that eliminator game, which I think takes place on Thursday this week.
Correct, yep.
But what have we got our eye on in that Super Smash? That Wellington batting lineup probably deserves a little bit of chat.
Oh, Wellington were incredible today. Higher score by Wellington, higher score at Eden Park out at Oval, 230 for two after 20 overs. And Finn Allen was the man who got off to a rocking start for Wellington, 73 off just 35 balls, went down to Wellington to get some first-team cricket, and he's been incredible this year. 650s, two against Auckland. He was incredible. And your man, Stu, Devin Conway, 91 not out off 50, just showed his class again.
Yeah, he's warming into form, isn't he? He's absolutely at the right time. It's great to see. I was a bit worried about Conway a little bit, just going back into Super Smash, because I think we've talked about it a little bit in that, you know, he was in and around that New Zealand squad, but wasn't really getting to play. And sometimes, you know, when that happens, you don't really, you know, you can lose your form. But now he's right back into it, and it's just fantastic. What did you boys make of Finn Allen? I mean, he's looked fantastic on TV. What did you make of sound off the bat and all that kind of stuff when you're live?
He's a different build than he was 3 or 4 years ago when we first saw him playing for Auckland as a really young fella. He's grown into his body shape now. He hits the ball a long, long way. He's powerful. And plays good cricket shots. You know, he didn't have to invent too much to really take the attack to what was a pretty strong bowling lineup for Auckland. You know, Kyle Jamieson, Will Somerville, both test cricketers, took them downtown. So really destroyed all comers in that innings and looks, you know, not just like a first-class cricketer, but a guy who could go on to represent New Zealand in 2 or 3 years if he keeps this kind of form up.
Yeah. Yeah, well, it's interesting, isn't it? I mean, you know, we talked a little bit about that. We're going to talk a little bit later about the Aussie T20 side. I do wonder if New Zealand will, you know, give new people an opportunity. It's just such a hard thing. We've got to build for this T20 World Cup, and, you know, we've already had a big squad, and someone like Finn Allen was not close there, but he's just had such an amazing tournament. You know, in any other year, I think you might get him in and around the squad, but they might be not so keen to do that at this point. Boys, you had to get home for the pod, obviously, and didn't stick around for the women's game, but turned out to be an incredibly exciting encounter.
Yeah, real close one, and it looks like that's going to be the fixture in 3 or 4 days' time. The qualifying final will be between the Auckland Hearts and the Wellington Blaze for the right to meet the Canterbury Magicians in the final on Saturday, Stu.
Yeah, amazing. And the Blaze, you know, I said it last week, just been all Blaze. It was all in all Wellington, really. It was in the men's, and it looked like it was going to be in the women's. They, you know, didn't have a huge total to chase down, but I guess they've been so reliant and I guess so well served by their top order, Sophie Devine, Maddie Green, Amelia Kerr, just the big names that they have there. And you know, they didn't fire today. And I was watching the end of that game and it just felt like a side that and players that haven't really had a bat and haven't had an opportunity to go in a pressure situation, and they just couldn't get the job done. And full credit to Auckland and Canterbury finishing top of the table. I know, you know, we talked to Frankie Mackay at the start of the season, and she was saying, you know, we sort of asked her, you know, not disrespectfully, I hope, but, you know, we sort of said to her, look, you know, can anyone take down the Blaze? And she said, yep, I think we can, the Magicians. And here we go. They've beaten them in the round robin. Mm. And yeah, they've finished top of the table, and now we'll get a home final. So very well done there.
Before we move on, guys, to Tournaments Australian and Topics Australian, from the Super Smash men's and women's, who have you got, Stuart, do you think that's going to go through and win both of those tournaments?
Well, it is hard to go past the two Wellington sides, even with the situation today. I mean, you know, Wellington Blaze now are going to be reliant a little bit on weather. You know, they ended up finishing third in the competition with this loss today. So if it does rain on Thursday, then they will get knocked out. But, you know, I still feel that they just have the absolute class. But I think if it is Blaze Magicians, it'll be an incredibly tight encounter. And then on the other side, you know, that Wellington Firebird side has just been so powerful up front. And, you know, the guys who scored the runs today, Blundell, and then Conway and Allen, as you mentioned, have just been such good form. And I've been really impressed with their spinners, actually, the way they've just sort of, I mean, Rachin Ravindra's had an injury now, but Peter Younghusband and even Michael Bracewell has been doing a decent job for them. So, yeah, I think if I had to tip someone, it'd be all Wellington. But, yeah, if anyone's going to tip it up, I'd say Magicians.
Yeah, look, the only thing for me with the Firebirds is we mentioned those players at the top of the order. So Finn Allen and obviously Conway, Blundell and Neesham coming in at number four today.
Pretty handy.
Not a lot of the other guys down the order have had that opportunity because all of those guys at times during the season have gone so well. So you don't want to be, you know, 30 for three in the final and some guys that probably haven't had even a chance to get in. Nick, just back to Conway and look, I think why he's really, really well placed as well for this Black Caps T20 stuff that's coming up as well. He played in many ways the perfect innings in that first innings of the game today because he let Finn Allen go. And you and I sort of spoke a number of times. We were looking at his strike rate and he was just ticking it over at literally a runner ball and making sure that he got Allen back on strike because he was going great guns. And then that transition as Blundell came in and kind of found his feet, he just went absolutely bananas. And yeah, certainly there was one shot just straight back down the ground that was just absolutely pure. It was almost like a forward defensive that just cannoned.
It was delicious
off that bat. So yeah, I don't think you're looking past the Firebirds, and similarly, I think the Blaze will be too strong as well.
Yeah, I agree. I think it's going to be a Canterbury Wellington final in both the men and the women, and I think on form and what I saw today, Wellington are going to come out on top on both of those.
And just a quick point, Bordy, we talked about this a little bit. The atmosphere today at Eden Park Outer Oval was superb. And I think, I reckon if they can get just a couple of thousand temporary seats in somehow, that'd be a cracking place to watch a test match.
Really enjoyable place to watch cricket. I think the playing facilities for the players would be the only thing that they'd have to work on to make sure that ground's up to scratch. But it's a good oval. It's a good oval for test cricket because you get plenty of value for runs. It's a good wicket. It was a great wicket today. It was over 400 runs scored in 40 overs. So it's a good wicket for batting. And I think it would be a great place to watch test cricket. A much better venue, I think, than Eden Park Major for test cricket at least.
Just before we leave the New Zealand shores, lads, I did just want to give a quick shout out to Nelson winning the Hawke Cup this week, my old stomping ground. Yeah, excellent effort. It's sort of something that doesn't happen that, you know, the provincial or the New Zealand provinces, that Hawke Cup really does mean a lot to quite a few of them. And yeah, really, really good job to Nelson there. We won't talk too much about it, but yeah, up the Griffins.
There we go. Another parochial Stu Lipshaw local scene, or it's good to see.
Well, and as guests on the podcast next week, we have got the whole of that victorious side all doing a 45-minute interview about their careers so far. But let's hop across the Tasman. So where do we want to start? I think let's start with the Big Bash on a positive note. Sydney Sixers lifting the championship against the Scorchers, who have had a little bit of a, I wouldn't necessarily say an issue, but since they've moved from the Wacker to the Optus, they haven't been quite the power.
Yeah, good point.
But they've kind of come back this year into contention.
Yeah, another year, another Perth-Sydney Big Bash final. It's getting pretty monotonous and repetitive to see those two sides compete. And they're by far the best two franchises in that Big Bash tournament over the course of the 10 years that it's been played. But Sydney really, the tail of the tape in that sort of semi-final and final is Sydney dominated off the back of the bat of James Vince. And you want your overseas player to win you two or three games during the tournament with the bat. Well, James Vince won both of those games off the back of his bat with a 98 and a 95 in the final. So he was outstanding in the finals. And Sydney just too good across the park for the Perth Scorchers, who started slowly, built into the tournament. Lots of momentum, as Raj Reddy would have us mention. And shout out to you, Raj, for the momentum of the Perth Scorchers. But Sydney Sixers just far too strong on the night, far too strong with the bat, and then also far too strong with the ball. And they've got a really good bowling lineup to back up those top order players that were outstanding. Josh Phillips, unnecessary run out notwithstanding.
Yeah, look, Vince was out. Yeah, Vince was just outstanding, as you mentioned. He played an awesome extra cover for six. It was just fantastic. And they talked a lot in the commentary around his England representative stuff and sort of how he's had opportunities and kind of just hasn't really taken them for England. Mm. And you know, they've got so many people in and around that squad and the limited overs stuff. Where do you stand on him, Binksy, in terms of making those sides?
Well, I think it raises a point as you look at the stats across this Big Bash batting statistics for the year. So most runs topped by Alex Hales and James Vince, and also a couple of other guys. So Liam Livingston.
Yeah, he was excellent.
Yeah, in the top 10 as well. So you know, there's a few guys in and around that squad. And I think the key thing is, whilst England are winning white ball cricket, then it's relatively easy for there to be a little bit of noise about these guys scoring plenty of runs in franchise cricket. Because at the end of the day, are you going to drop David Milan? Are you going to drop Owen Morgan? Are you going to drop Jason Roy? Joe Root can't even get a game in the side at the moment. And we talked last week on the pod about how, from an international runs perspective, he's pretty good across all three formats. I think probably Vince's time has passed. I think he's been given a number of opportunities, both red and white ball, and I don't see him being someone that they will turn to, particularly when you've got the likes of Tom Banton, you've got Dan Lawrence emerging onto the scene as well.
Your favourite, Sam Billings.
Yeah, Sam Billings, James Bracey. So there's a few guys around that are probably ahead of him in the pecking order. For me, the conversation would be more around Alex Hales, and look, he really must have burnt some serious bridges for them not to be able
to
reintegrate a guy like that when, you know, the likes of a Kevin Peterson have come back into the environment after what he did or didn't do.
I saw Bondi saying this week that he feels like Hales has been punished too much and what a class cricketer he is. Yeah, like you say, there's something's gone on, and it's obviously too much that they're just not willing to get over.
But yeah, I think you're right, Adam. I mean, this has been a tremendous shop window for English cricketers, batters in particular, in that Big Bash. I mean, they've all been fantastic. And they've all pushed their case for selection. Livingston, I thought, was excellent. Hales and Vince have been fantastic. And it's a great problem to have, you know, as Hamish and Andy would say, must be nice to have so many players pushing for representative honours. But if you've got Bairstow, you've got Butler, you've got Stokes at the top of the order, you throw Roy in there as well, you know, unless one of those guys goes through a serious run of outs, then I think these guys are, and guys like Shane Bond in particular, are going to benefit from having, you know, these top-class English international-calibre players available for their tournament.
Looking at the bowling stats, though, Baldy, who are the next kind of cabs off the rank from an Australian perspective? And the reason I ask that is, if you look at the stats from a wickets perspective, it's pretty much all Australia in there. So there haven't been those overseas bowlers, whether that's particularly with the seamers, protecting them from too much bubble life, and kind of going off to play in the Big Bash from a, you know, from a conditioning perspective.
Yeah, possibly.
But yeah, I mean, some of the guys that have been mentioned, Jai Richardson, AJ Tye, they've had a crack for Australia. Mm-hmm. I think Stecherty's in and around the sort of mix up at the moment, but you've got people like Nisa as well. But who else is coming through and who's caught your eye from a bowling perspective through this 19-month Big Bash tournament we've just witnessed?
A couple of big names that are sort of kind of coming back to the fore. Jai Richardson, as you mentioned, he was excellent in the Big Bash. He's still carrying a bit of a shoulder injury, and I think that won't hamper his selection chances, but it certainly doesn't do it any good. Same with Chris Lynn, you know, the bad shoulders mean you can't be a three-dimensional cricketer anymore. AJ Tye has been good in this tournament. I mean, you know, short ball notwithstanding. Wes Agar's the name that's being mentioned a lot, a younger brother of a left-arm spinner, Ashton Agar, 23, big unit, lots of beach muscles, but also bowls a heavy ball and can bowl it in good areas as well. So those are the names that have kind of been mentioned. The guy who flies under the radar for me is Ben Dwarshuis from the Sydney Sixers. I think he ended up with 24, 25 wickets in the tournament, bowled some really tough overs for Sydney, bowled the sort of uncomfortable overs in the power play and in the power surge. And his economy rate, have you got it there, Adam?
Yeah, so Dwarshuis, 24 wickets at an average of 16. Economy, just a smidge under 9, but a strike rate of 11.
Yeah, so he's had an excellent tournament, and he's been good for a number of years. I don't think that he's one of those guys who's going to get mentioned in selection conversations for Australia. But again, the Sydney Sixers benefit from that because he turns out for them year in, year out, plays every game, and does a really, really good job in some of the more difficult circumstances.
And you mentioned selection there, Baldy. I mean, we've seen this Aussie T20 squad coming to New Zealand. I think they're on the plane either as we speak or leaving pretty shortly. Are those guys that you mentioned, you know, Wes Agar, are there any names that you sort of feel disappointed that aren't there? I mean, obviously, they named the squads before the South Africa tour the South African Test tour has now been postponed. Yep. So obviously, we'd have a few different names on there. But yeah, from that, I guess, second tier level, are there anyone that you're pretty disappointed isn't coming on that plane?
Yeah, I would have thought that Josh Inglis had probably done enough to get in and amongst that squad.
Inglis or Philippe?
Josh Inglis. Yeah. Josh Philippe is in the squad, but I like Josh Inglis as well from Western Australia. So I've got the squad here: Finch, Wade, Ashton Agar, Jason Berendorf, who had a good season, but I think, you know, if you have a look at someone like possibly, possibly Dwarshuis or Stecherty, but Stecherty's obviously in the test side. Mitchell Marsh, Glenn Maxwell, Ben McDermott, who I thought had a good tournament. Riley Meredith, I'm really glad to see him in that squad. Josh Felipe, who's the top order batsman from the Sydney Sixers, who I think deserves a shot. Jai Richardson and Kane Richardson are both in there. Daniel Sams from the Thunder. Tanvir Sanga, the young 19-year-old leg spinner from Sydney, who, you know, Shane Bond on this podcast told us would have a good tournament. And what a, you know, what a prophetic Nostradamus prediction that was. He's been brilliant. Darcy Short, who's been a little bit quiet. Marcus Stoinis, who's there because his name is Marcus Stoinis and can do great things for Australia. Ashton Turner, AJ Tye, and Adam Zampa. So the guys who I thought, you know, were probably unlucky to miss out there, really Josh Inglis for mine, I think has done enough to be considered for that tour. And there are a couple of bowlers in there, but I think they've got it pretty much right. Anyone who I would leave out, I think probably would be Berendorf, but he's done a reasonable job in the finals for Perth. He's bowled tough overs, did a reasonable job against those Sydney openers as well. So I think it's a pretty good-looking squad. Obviously, there's no test players other than Wade in that T20 squad to come here to New Zealand. They're on their way today. The only guy that really concerns me there is the form of Aaron Finch, who hasn't been able to buy a run either in the IPL or in the Big Bash. So he'll have a lot of work to do and a lot to prove in this tournament, because he's got to be in form because he's our captain going into India.
Hey, has anyone figured out how to say Josh Felipe's name? They've said it on the commentary, they were all saying it, Josh Philippi yesterday. I've heard Josh Felipe, Josh, you know, all sorts of different pronunciations of that last name. Is he the new Manus Labuschagne?
He could be. I'm going to attempt to, in the spirit of Manus, to say Josh Philippe's name as differently as I can every time I pronounce it until I'm given an official word on how it's pronounced.
I just said like the actor, and that is it Ryan Felipe?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
So he's Ryan Felipe, is he?
Brother of Ryan.
Okay. Well, that's his new nickname, Brother of Ryan. Yeah, good looking.
And you mentioned Marnus there. I kind of feel like he's been a bit disrespected by not necessarily his the way they're joking about him, but actually as a bowler this summer, because he's come back into that BBL stuff and done really well. When he was in the test stuff, and it felt like all his teammates were laughing at him because he said he wanted to get 200 test wickets, but BBL, he's come back in, he's been a really important bowler.
Yeah, he bowls really well. I mean, he and Swepson were a big part of the reason why that Heat fairy tale just kept going and going and going, and they run into the finals. Both of those guys were able to put the brakes on, put the squeeze on, as they say now, it's the modern vernacular. But Marnus was good. Bowled good leggies, bowled good wrong-ins in good areas. The thing that really impressed me, actually, is his ability to change his pace for a part-timer. Often part-timers don't bowl enough and frequently enough in different situations where they're able to successfully change their pace up. You know, they might try a quicker one and drag it down. They might get a little bit of loop and bowl a fully. But he was able to change his pace really, really well. And I think he formed a great combination with Swepson. He is going to be a good part-time bowler if Australia have a captain that uses him appropriately.
My question for you on this, Baldy, we're not that far away from this T20 World Cup now. You've not got that many more games to kind of settle on your, again, we use the modern vernacular, your role within the team.
Sure.
This squad looks to me a little bit experimental. So notwithstanding, you know, bubble to bubble and all those kind of conversations, the South Africa tour that's been cancelled.
Sure.
But yeah, this squad just—it feels as if there's some guys in this list that are no chance of playing in that World Cup.
Yeah, they probably are. Yeah.
What are your thoughts on? I guess how you could kind of read that? Is it an opportunity for some guys to play themselves into it? Is it for, you know, a Finch potentially a chance where he might talk himself out of a T20 World Cup if he can't get going again?
A couple of things that are going to be really interesting in this tour is who bats at number four. Because there's lots of guys in that Australian side, and you throw Warner in there and you throw Labuschagne. Those guys all bat in the top three. All the guys they brought in, Phillippe, Darcy, Short, they all bat in the top three. The guy who I'm really looking for is Ben McDermott, to see what he can do, because he's probably the guy that Australia are looking at in that squad to go, okay, we need someone to bat in that kind of awkward 4-5 position and bat in the middle overs. And what's he going to be able to do there? I don't think Australia have decided on their spin combination. I think the fact that Tanvir Sanga's come out of the woodwork, they've given him an opportunity to show what he's going to have on the international stage. Maybe they're looking at him for India. I think they're probably looking more like Agar and Zampa are going to be our top two spinners, and then do we take a third one in the squad would be my question.
Well, and Zampa's got the coffee machine as well, so that's important.
Yep, big time. Yep, big time. And if you're in the bubble, you need to be able to wake up early, and he's got the form there, so it's good for him.
So we're going to move from the slightly frivolous, my comment around Adam Zampa's very, very nice medium grind, flat white, and some excellent milk work, and also carries all of the, you know, the other milks with him as well, you know, a bit of soy, bit of almond.
It's all there for you.
A bit of oat milk. He's got all of those in the kit bag. But we've mentioned this Cricket Australia cancellation of the South Africa tour. Fair to say Graham Smith not particularly happy. I'm just going to raise a relatively provocative statement here. If this had been a tour to England and the English Cricket Board had been guaranteeing that biosecurity safety like they did for the West Indies and Pakistan, I would favour that Australia would have been on that plane. And I think the other component here is that we did talk to Fadoz Munda about this and the importance of that tour. So whilst you ponder that thought, let's hear it from Fadoz now and what she said about the importance of this tour to the Cricket South Africa economy.
It's really tricky and there's so much hinging on it. It really is. You know, I can't stress how important it is for South African cricket that that series goes ahead from a playing perspective, from a financial perspective. And it's really the only certain cricket we've got. And then there's just kind of this blank slate. I mean, next summer is so unconfirmed that, you know, other teams have got fixtures going and we don't even know if we'll have a cricket board by then. So it's very important that it takes place.
So that was recorded obviously before the decision for this to be cancelled, but just stressing from a Cricket South Africa perspective the importance. And whilst that can't be the reason that a team goes and tours, it feels as if There's some kind of different boards listened to in sort of different circumstances potentially.
I can't refute that claim because I don't know the conversations that have gone on. But the news that has come out of the Australian camp in response to the you know, South Africa being quite rightly pretty upset and perturbed. It sounded to me, and I'm speculating here, that South Africa put their best foot forward and said these are the things that we can do and what we're going to try and do to make that biosecure bubble work for the Australian team. I think the Australian team had some pretty strict requirements around whether or not the staff that are working in the biosecure facility would be on site or they would be allowed to go home with their families. Reading between the lines, I think something in that setup has raised some concerns from the Australian medical professionals. And the Australian response from their board was that our medical professionals have given us overwhelming evidence and reasons to suggest that we can't guarantee the safety of our players, and that's what the Australian board has gone with. Look, I can't respond to the question around whether or not they would go if it were England.
Or India.
Or India or any other nation. I mean, the fact of the matter is they've said that they've listened to medical advice and medical advice has told them that they can't go. They've offered to host the series and South Africa have said no. I think from Fidosa's comments, I think the reason for that is probably financial. In that a postponed tour means at some point South Africa will get some financial benefit and income from Australia going to tour South Africa, even if it's not before July or before the World Test Championship final. Look, it's a really sad situation because from an Australian point of view, their next tour then, or their next big test series is the Ashes. And so all these questions that we had around, you know, what were we going to do with leadership? What were we going to do with our bowling attack? What were we going to do with our opening batters and our middle order batters? All these questions now won't get answered potentially until that first test of the Ashes series. And have a look at how good England are going at the moment. That's a real concern, I think, for Australian cricket, not just the fact that we can't get over and play some cricket in South Africa for whatever reason.
Yeah, I think that's probably the point that I want to pick up on as well, Baldy. The fact that it's just sad for cricket, you know, because I think we could deep dive into, and you know, I understand your point completely, Binksy, and do feel like they might have tried possibly a little bit harder if it was an India or an England tour. You know, it feels hard to think that the Ashes would be cancelled because of COVID, given that England was able to demonstrate what they could do, and you know, South Africa obviously had some troubles in that bubble with England. So, you know, without being in that situation, it's impossible to know. But I think, as Fidosa said, as you've touched on, Baldy, it's just sad for cricket because, you know, it was going to be such an important part for the World Test Championship, such an important series, for those two countries. I mean, South Africa obviously in Pakistan right now. They've just been to Sri Lanka. They seem like a side that's trying to rebuild, and coming up against Australia would have been a great contest on that front. And also Australia, their test side obviously has just had this series against India where everyone expected them to win in the circumstances and they weren't able to do that. So it would have been an opportunity for them to, I guess, show that they were a top side again and to go push their best foot forward for the World Test Championship, which, you know, the postponement of this tour now means that New Zealand automatically qualify for.
The closing, I think, thought I'll put on this is the ICC's role in all of this. If you look at other governing bodies of pretty much any sport, they would control these kind of protocols and say what needs to be put in place. And ultimately, in this environment now, this COVID environment that we are going to be in for the next several years, I would think some of the enhanced things that are going to be required to make sure that we don't have any issues. They've been almost deafeningly silent on this matter. They've not really got involved and from an outsider's perspective, appeared to influence these conversations. And look, I know it's always been the case in cricket that the visiting board security teams and medical teams will often go and check these places out. We only need to look at Pakistan and ability to go and tour over there. It's been down to those individual security advisors for countries to say, actually, we can go.
Yep.
And this is what we will need.
Yep.
So I do challenge the ICC. I'm sure they listen to the pod. But I would challenge them to kind of look at this and say, right, how can we actually now help these boards to broker those kind of deals and arrangements, put in some absolute guide rails that are really going to help those conversations and that planning, and say, look, these are the, you know, the minimum standards. There's going to be some other things that you might need to negotiate. But that, for me, now needs to be their role if they're going to keep 10 nations, 11 nations playing test cricket.
You're absolutely right. And I hadn't really thought about that in that way before. It's a really good point, because the ICC can set a framework for touring, and they can set a framework for, you know, in this environment, you need to provide these securities for players. You need to be able to provide grounds and accommodation and training facilities that match these standards. And then it becomes not easy, but easier for hosting nations, particularly ones that are affected in the larger community by COVID, like England, like Pakistan, like India, like South Africa are, to go, well, actually, there's all of this stuff going on in the community, but actually from a biosecurity perspective, we can guarantee the safety of players because we meet all of these frameworks and standards that the ICC would have set. And then it makes it easier to judge whether or not a country like Bangladesh or a country like Ireland or whoever can meet those standards and can host tours. And then it's less about the financial benefit or otherwise of whether or not those guys can tour, because that's always important, but whether or not actually they are fit from a medical perspective and a biosecurity perspective to put those tours on.
Yeah. At the minute, it just seems as if they come up with a points table that no one understands and ping someone for wearing the wrong colour wristband.
Or bowling slow over rates.
Yeah.
Yeah, fair enough.
Yeah, geez, that over rate, that we've talked about how much it annoys us that people bowl slow over rates and just nobody cares about it, but it could actually now play a major part in the World Test Championship. Aussie dock points and now is under New Zealand, and, New Zealand's now obviously qualified.
Good. It's about time that someone did something about slow over rates. And if it takes Australia missing the World Test Championship to actually go and solve that problem, then good.
And the irony being that the match referee was David Boone.
Yeah.
Good.
Well, all they need to do now is fix the no ball problem, and then we're sorted.
Fix the no ball problem in terms of?
There were 220 no balls or something like that in Test cricket between August 2020 and now, since the umpires started using the third umpire to refer no balls. It's incredible. It's almost like people are paying the price for 25 years of fast bowlers running into the nets from under 12 cricket to club cricket to international cricket and just paying no attention to the front line when they're training. It's starting to bite people in the bum.
Just on the World Test Championship from a New Zealand point of view, obviously fantastic. We're now there. We talked about how we're going to tour England for two tests. So now, obviously, three tests in a row in England, which is actually really big for New Zealand. We don't, you know, we sort of don't get to go over there probably as much as we would like. And those tours, I think, mean a lot for, they've certainly meant a lot in my lifetime as a fan, watching the Black Caps and trying to win over there. And now that I've, I guess, got my head into the fact that New Zealand's going to be in it, I feel really disappointed that it's the World Test Championship is one test, the final, because if it's a draw, I've heard no super overs, no countbacks. It is just a draw and they share the trophy, which, you know, maybe not in England where you tend to get results. But yeah, imagine, you know, all this big four-year cycle, three-year cycle or whatever it is, and we just have a draw for the final. I feel like that would be a real shame.
Well, I mean, the Sheffield Shields, if you qualify first for the final, or you're top of the ladder,
you host the final,
and a draw
First innings,
gets you the shield.
Yep, that's right.
So yeah, I wonder whether that's potentially a
first
better
innings.
Yeah. Well, why don't we just change the rules at the conclusion of the match? Keep the Kiwis.
Well, that's a good idea.
Keep the Kiwis
well,
on their toes.
That's what happened in the World Cup final, wasn't it?
Halfway through, we'll just change the rules and we'll go, nah, first innings. Whoever's won first innings, and if there's a draw, then it's just we'll go back to that. Or the most balls left outside of off stump, perhaps. Fewest no balls.
There
you go. Best over rate.
On a serious note, I do think they're going to have learned a lot, hopefully, from this World Test Championship. I think that the fact that it's gone through and it's had so many obstacles, hopefully now they can actually put together something that people will care about even more, because it has brought something. And, you know, if they can refine it, it will hopefully bring even more to the test game.
It's given us two things. It's given us context in test series that otherwise wouldn't have had it, and it's engaged fans. A lot of the mechanics and the logistics of it have been really haphazard from all in all aspects. So that needs a complete overhaul from the calendar to the length that the round robins or whatever they're called go all the way through. But it's given us context in test matches that otherwise wouldn't have had them, and things take on extra meaning, which is fantastic. And it's got players and fans talking about it. Australia said in response to, you know, the not being able to go to South Africa, it's a real shame because our ability to play in the World Test Championship final now is out of our hands. Going to South Africa, Australia 2-0 or 3-0 could have almost guaranteed themselves a place in the final, but now they can't. So I think it's got players interested in it. It's got fans interested in it. We just need to get the format right. And once we do that, tickety-boo.
Well, guys, we're about to wrap up the pod. And you told me I couldn't talk about England, India.
But not until Thursday. You can talk about it on Thursday.
I do just want to give a massive shout-out to our captain, Joe Root. 218 in that game. Going ahead at the moment. So, as we stand, England 578 in the first innings, India 70 for two, day three, session two. But he's in a rich vein of form. And for me, that kind of big four conversation's back again, isn't it?
Yep, it's back on. So the big three is now the big four again. You throw Bubba Azam in there and it's a big five. He's been incredible of late, Joe Root. Seven tests in India with a score above 50 in a row. It's good enough for second all time. Three back-to-back hundreds. He now has three double hundreds as captain of England. No one else has more than one. He's just in an incredible vein of form at the moment, and you're absolutely right. He's starting to answer all of those questions that people put to him about conversion rates, about scoring lots of 50s but not scoring hundreds, about not going on and scoring big scores. So he's answered all of those questions, and, you know, it just goes to show, if you prefer batting at four, bat at four. Make someone else bat at number three, because if you can get double hundreds batting at four, that's where you should be.
Absolutely.
Lads, before we finish, I'm sure Binksy will get plenty of opportunity on Thursday to talk about how good Joe Root's going. And yeah, I will echo those comments. It has been incredibly impressive. And, you know, Binksy talked about how good he is at playing spin, and he's certainly shown that in the last month. But I did, before we do go, I did want to ask you, Baldy, what's going on with Justin Langer? He's getting, you know, full support of the board, and Steve Smith's asking him all these questions, saying, you know, he's got a little bit of work to do on his personal side and management side, mm-hmm. and you know, everyone's got to grow, and all mm-hmm. these kind of comments that, you know, if they happened in the when the football managers get the full support of the board and the premiership, they're sacked about a week yep. later. So yeah, what's going on?
Look, Justin Langer is an interesting character. He's almost the polar opposite of someone like Darren Lehman, you know, because I watched a lot of Darren Lehman's team in the Big Bash. They're my team, the Brisbane Heat. And he's a completely relaxed character. Can't watch a game. Very nervous watching the game, but he's a completely relaxed character and sends really simple, basic messages to his team. I think Justin Langer is an incredibly intense, hard on his sleeve, emotional guy who works brilliantly when you're wired the same way that he is. When you're wired the same way that Justin Langer is, I think he's an easy guy to work with it and to be mentored by. Players who are wired differently, I think, will respond differently to him. And you see that in all walks of life, in business and in sport and in personal relationships. You know, if you aren't the kind of intense character that he is, I think there's an opportunity for him to rub you the wrong way a little bit, and also to maybe not meet in the middle. It's very difficult for people like that to meet laid-back characters or kind of introverted characters in the middle from a relationship point of view. So to a certain extent, he's right, Steve Smith. He's got a lot of work to do to make sure that he's being inclusive in terms of the way he relates to players. I think his intensity needs to be balanced by someone who's a little bit more laid-back in that dressing room. I think the other thing that we need to consider is all of this stuff. Sorry, there's a wicket's just fallen, and Binksy's got the old fist pump going.
Coley's gone
in the background. Coley's been dismissed. Coley caught Pope bowl best for 11. There you go, live scoring. The key issue for me is if Australia aren't having those conversations about having to learn and having to grow from a leadership point of view, there's something fundamentally wrong with the way that we're trying to develop our coaches and our leaders. So I think that's a really good thing that we're having those conversations. They can be unfortunate and they can be uncomfortable and they can be ugly at times, but they have to be having them now before we find ourselves 2-0 down in an Ashes series, and all of a sudden the wheels start to fall off and there's fractures in the dressing room.
Yeah, look, I don't know, because I don't know enough about the goings-on in the Australian dressing room other than having watched that bit of Aussie propaganda on Amazon.
Oh, here we go.
Yeah, a couple of months ago. But one thing is for sure, you can see that there's some clashes in that dressing room environment. There's some players that are on the outer. Usman Khawaja is a really good one. He's a very different character to Langer. He was happy to speak up against probably some of those kind of regime things. For me, the coach has got to facilitate a number of different personalities, a number of different ways of approaching the game. If you've got someone like Shane Warne who wants a cigarette and a toasted ham and cheese sandwich, but he's got 708 test wickets, you kind of need to give someone like that a little bit of rope, as long as he's not undermining the whole ethos of the team.
Yep.
It seems as if it's my way or the highway a little bit, and just that lack of adaptability. And we've talked about this on the pod with Mickey Arthur, and perhaps how he's a little bit old-fashioned.
Yep.
I think if you look at the best managers, the best coaches, they give freedom for their players to go out and express themselves and win games of cricket. And it sounds as if when you've got Steve Smith, who, let's be honest, you know, from a leadership perspective, isn't really one to stand in a high place and throw rocks. If he's making those kind of comments with his standing as a cricketer, then I think that that's going to really, really start to undermine that dressing room quite quickly, particularly if results don't flow.
Yeah, they've got some stuff to address there. I mean, you talked about it. Just because a guy is an intense character doesn't mean they can't relate well to players. You take a guy like Sir Alex from Manchester United, an intense character, very demanding of his players, but gave them the individual freedom to express themselves within a pretty loose framework of how they wanted to play, how Manchester United wanted to play. Wayne Bennett, from a rugby league perspective, exactly the same thing.
You're going back in era though as well.
Yeah, I am going back in era with both of those guys. But all of the players, and I've been lucky enough to meet Wayne Bennett and talk to him, and all of the players who talk about him and relate to him talk about how he cares about them as a person. And I think what Australia need to do is maybe just go back to first principles and get to know each other a little bit better as people, and understand each other as people, and then work from there and move forward from there. It's going to take a really fine balance of Justin Langer putting his vision for what he wants Australia to do, but then finding ways for individuals like Smith, like Marnus, like Cummins to exist and to thrive within that framework. And in a cricket team, it's not easy. You know, a cricket team is one of the biggest groups of people that you've got on the field, where you've still got the ability for individuals to change the course of the game. It's bigger than basketball. It's not as big as American football, but it's right in that middle ground. And you've got to have all 11 people, 12 people, 13 people that are involved getting on the same page. And I think that's going to be a real challenge for Australian cricket moving forward.
Well, look, Baldy, a very eloquent way to end the pod. I'm sure we're going to have lots more to talk about with Australia, as we mentioned earlier on, hitting the shores here today. First game, the 22nd of February at Hagley Oval. We'll be at Eden Park for, I think, the fourth game, with the final T20 being played at the Bay Oval in Tauranga. So wickets getting better throughout the course of the tour. Hopefully Finchie's in some form by the time they hit Tauranga. But as we said, heaps and heaps of cricket going on, so we are going to be aiming to record a little bit later this week. Our live scoring update, of course, 3 or 4 days out of date already. I'm hoping that England managed to get over the line by the time this hits the airwaves, but if not, we'll be talking about it in the podcast feed over the next 2 or 3 days. Would urge you to go and dip back into the back catalogue, have a listen to Fido's Moondo, plenty of news, views and interviews as well that you can go and catch up on. But the Top Order will be back very, very shortly in your podcast feeds. But for now, good night, God bless, and we'll speak to you soon. Sports Social Podcast Network.